Hey guys, Maestro here, and I wanted to personally invite you to Rockstock 2018, the move-in experience of the year. Join us in sunny Miami Beach, Florida on October 27th and 28th for movement, laughter, dancing, music, fun, and yes, you will get CEUs. The lineup is absolute fire, including yours truly and your boy, Dr. John Campione. So head on over to rocktape.com, use the code RTPodcasters18, and save yourself $100. Yeah, $100. I'll see you there.
What's up, everybody? My name is John Campione. Thank you for downloading the Rock Tape Podcast. Today's a special episode. I have my first two-time guest appearance from Rock Tape's Director of Education, Steve Capobianco. Steve's with me to discuss two brand new courses in the Rock Tape curriculum, Rock Floss and Rock Pods. We have a handful of these courses available for the remainder of this year, so after you listen to today's episode, check out rocktape.com to see where these awesome courses are going to be in 2018. While you're on the site, don't forget to get 15% off your next purchase using the promo code ROCKCAST. That's ROCKCAST, ROCKCAST. I'll be back to chat with you on the other end, but let's get to my conversation with Capo.
Let's start with Rock Floss. Rock Floss is something we've introduced just this year with our Rock Tape Performance class. Where did the concept of Rock Floss really come from with some of the things that are already out there?
Well, I'll just speak for myself in respect to my practice is that I've been using compressional floss bands for many years. And I need to give credit to Kelly Surrett, who really is the one that reintroduced this methodology into our community, in my opinion. He did this years ago in launching his Voodoo Floss Bands, and it literally changed the way that I addressed certain conditions that I had difficulty with. And a good example of that would be chronic epicondyle issues. And once I noticed the benefit of them and how they fit into my framework of approach, I just knew that I wanted to integrate that into our FMT curriculum for a couple of reasons. I think the first reason is, and I probably would ask you, as I ask my attendees typically, is like when you purchase a floss band, how do they typically arrive to you? What packaging do they come in?
I want to make sure I get the right answer. They usually come rolled up, you know, just kind of boxed in their own little like plastic bag.
Yeah, that's exactly how they come. Is they come in a plastic bag. They typically don't come with any instructions.
And, oh yeah, good point.
And then the next question I ask is, you know, how do you decide how to use these? And most people say they go onto YouTube.
Yep.
Or some other inconsistent way of gathering information. And so what I wanted to do, or what the company wanted to do, was to legitimize this intervention, put it into some better packaging that has consistent, safe, and effective instructions. And then the education just dovetails that, where we explain how we use this type of intervention to be able to manage mechanical, musculoskeletal types of conditions.
How do you see that it complements tape? Because, you know, one of the three functions of all of kinesiology tape is decompression, but this mm-hmm. floss band is compression. So how does it complement that when it almost at first glance seems kind of antagonistic?
Well, antagonistic in respect to the mechanism, I would say I would agree. But when it comes to how it complements the therapeutic effect, I think they work really well together. One is obviously compressional, as the floss bands are. But what they do in respect to compression is that they do assist in improving interlayer gliding. I can explain that better by just saying, you know, having multiple sheets of tissue laying on top of each other, they should have the ability to optimally glide amongst each other. And when they don't, that leads to all the things that we see in practice. So this compressional therapy adds compression and shear to improve the ability for those tissues to glide amongst each other. Then we complement that with tape, where we add a decompressive load and we maintain that space that's just been acquired through the compressional therapy to optimize the ability for those tissues to glide amongst each other.
So you add the compressional force, you maybe apply some manual work with the compression band, get better sliding surfaces, and then the tape can kind of give you that unloading to keep that sliding from occurring when someone is leaving the office.
Yeah, and giving us, you know, several days of that intervention and benefit. So we typically say, when it comes to rock tape, at least, we say that tape should be left on for 3 to 5 days. Mm-hmm. So if we can optimize that space acquisition, that space that we just improved on by the floss therapy, we can optimize the longevity of the effect.
So how did this develop from maybe just introducing it into a section of our tape courses to becoming its own class? Because obviously you're going to have to expand on applications and the research behind it. How did that come to be, and what is making this its own class?
Well, like all of our courses, they come from the requests of our attendees. You know, we've been doing this for years now, and we obviously started with tape. And as we would explain our methodology in taping, there would be attendees saying, you know, how do you use this intervention? How do you apply this intervention? And that slowly starts to build into another educational platform. And this is no different in how Rock Floss presented to us, is that we slowly integrated it into our current education, our taping education, and we got more and more questions and inquiries of how we can expand on the model of approach. And so we decided to launch the course just a month or so ago, to be able to present to our attendees the multiple ways that you could use a band like this, which are a lot more extensive than you may think, that it's not just a compressional therapy. Mm-hmm. It can create shearing forces, as I just expressed, to different layers of tissue. It can move fluid effectively, mechanically, out of an area of congestion. It can improve our body representation, or our awareness of where a body part is, which is typically compromised with those that are experiencing pain. So there's more to this type of therapy that needed to be shared, and it needed to be packaged in a way that was consistent and concise and safe. So that's why we came up with the Rock Floss education platform.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really blown away because, like you said in the beginning, that it usually just comes in a package, no instructions, anything like that. So most people go, oh, you wrap it up really tight, and then you just kind of move around it. But there are so many different applications that you can really utilize this for. So, like, how would be, for instance, like you mentioned, joint position sense, proprioception, like what would be the difference in application for something like increasing position sense versus just, you know, compressing the tissue, trying to get that shearing forces?
Well, it's a great question. And we're still talking about an elastic band that's wrapping a specific area. Mm-hmm. So you're still trying to provide information to the brain, and we could do that just by wrapping it in a traditional way that most flossing techniques are applied. But when it comes to the amount of pressure that we apply, paying attention to the person's response to the amount of pressure or compression that we apply, those are things that we share with our attendees, that it's not just wrapping it till the person is grinning and bearing and holding on for life for the next 2 minutes. We're applying it in a safe and an effective manner to be able to achieve different goals. One of those goals might be to move fluid. One of them might be to improve the gliding capacity or the mechanical quality of the tissue. And the other one might be just to provide a novel stimulus to the brain to remind, you know, the nervous system where that body part is in space, which has been shown to optimize our ability to move and to decrease pain.
Need more input, right?
Yeah.
So you mentioned safety there too, and I think that's something that comes up quite a bit when I'm talking about the floss band in class is, you know, how long can I keep this on? How tight should it be? We talk about some contraindications, and those are pretty clear, but when people see this kind of thing, they talk about like occlusion, they talk about, you know, what sort of risks should we watch out for? So what are some of the safety guidelines that we have to really worry about with the compression band? Are there inherent dangers with this kind of thing?
Absolutely. First and foremost, when it comes to the tolerance of the skin to the band, you have to recognize that this band, just like many of the bands in this category, are typically latex rubber.
Oh, good point.
And if you have a latex allergy, it shouldn't be applied to your skin. So that is the first thing that I would start with. Then we're talking about a compressional force to the system. If there are any cardiovascular considerations, any vascular insufficiencies that have been diagnosed, this is considered a contraindication to those categories. And then there are some other ones that are probably more relative contraindications, and we're talking about venous insufficiency, mm-hmm. Deep vein thrombosis. Those types of things are contraindicated in respect to the area that you're going to be wrapping.
Mm-hmm. Is there, say, in a normal individual, is there danger of occluding, you know, blood vessels? Is there a time limit for this kind of treatment style?
Yeah, this is the part where you're not going to get much data in respect to the form of wrapping that we're doing. Now, if we're talking about blood flow restriction, BFR, there's lots of research in respect to applying some type of occlusion mechanism, typically around the proximal end of the extremities. Mm. There's lots of research in respect to how this type of intervention can aid in recovery and actually improve performance by changing some hormonal parameters. But there's not much in respect to how floss bands are applied, which are not so specific like BFR is,
yeah,
to occlude blood flow or to mitigate blood flow. The floss bands are more expanded, so they're covering a larger area of the body. So there's not much research that talks about the risks associated to this types of therapy. To be honest, if you're looking at the literature in respect to compressional floss band therapy, there's probably at best 5 to 7 papers out there, and typically they're small subject bases. There's not much literature to really support what we're talking about. So what we're really left with is to be able to apply this in a safe and effective manner for the individual that you're working with. And what I mean by that is that when you're wrapping someone, you need to take into account their tolerance level and applying it with a specific amount of compression that they can tolerate for a period of time. We generally suggest that we keep it within a 2-minute period of time. We wrap it, and then we have them move non-weight-bearing and weight-bearing for 2 minutes, and then we remove it and reassess. We're taking into account their ability to manage those 2 minutes, so we may take an assessment of their subjective appreciation of what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. We take into account, are they losing any sensation? Are they having numbness or tingling or any other neurological signs? We take that into account as well to decide how much compression we're going to be applying for a period of time.
So a lot of common sense put on, you know, the practitioner. You got to make sure you're watching out for those signs. You know,
correct.
I've done this a lot recently since we introduced it, and I've noticed, you know, if you put the same amount of tension on the thigh as you do on the arm, you're probably going to feel, the patient I've noticed feels a little bit more numbness in the arm a little bit more quickly, or down into the hand rather too. So I have to just make a judgment call. Do I want to keep going longer, or do I want to make sure that I'm, you know, being safe for the patient too? So for those of you listening, you know, it's going to be different for different places of the body, but you really just have to kind of watch out for those signs, right?
Yeah. And we're really clear on that, is that I share this with my attendees, is that I remind people that we're not just wrapping a piece of meat. There's a person attached to that piece of meat, and that person, we need to be able to have that relationship with, that interaction with, and get a, there's got a lot of communication that goes back and forth between the practitioner applying this to someone and the person that's being applied to.
Yeah, so be the safest person in the room, right?
Correct.
So going back to the kind of the original function of the compression philosophy, is looking at tissue glide and shearing, we've also introduced now the rock pots, which play a very important role in that tissue glide and shearing. So how did that come to be where we started to develop our own pods and then turn that into a class?
Well, similar to what I just expressed in respect to floss bands is that we got people suggesting that since we do communicate how tape creates a decompressive load, wouldn't it make sense that we would introduce another decompressive intervention like cupping to be able to optimize the effects? And we just didn't have the answers until testing it for the last 2 or 3 years. And we finally came up with something that we felt comfortable and confident with that could provide us the results that we were looking for in an easy, safe, effective, comfortable fashion. Mm. So we came up with our version of cupping therapy that have these silicone cups that have an easy method of creating vacuum that improves the efficiency of the utilization of this type of tool.
Yeah, very cool kind of mechanism for the cups themselves. They can fold up on themselves, and then you have kind of the plunger mechanism to it. And I think one of the biggest questions I get is, you know, we stress so much in our blades course that we don't need to create a bruising, and then we kind of launch the pods and people start asking, well, isn't that going to create a bruise? How do you kind of talk about the differences with what we're trying to do with the pods versus traditional cupping?
It's a great question. And we've actually had plenty of those discussions even internally amongst our instructor pool, of which you've been part of.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important conversation to have, because it is true that we talk about mitigating the amount of the quote unquote therapeutic bruise that has been expressed in instrument assisted techniques. Mm-hmm. And the reason we say that is for the same reason I talked about the patient's perception and tolerance to floss band compression, is that we do need to recognize when we're applying any intervention, I don't care if it's tape or tools or cups or our hands-on therapies, is that we do need to recognize the tolerance level of the person that we're working with, because we want to still maintain that idea that we're the safest person in the room to be able to downregulate the nervous system of someone that's in pain or that's having anxiety associated with not able to move their body the way that they want. And so I'm going to start that conversation, or my answer, with that we do need to recognize that there's a relationship between the person that you're working with, not just the tissue that you're working on. Mm-hmm. So in saying that is that we do talk about a graded exposure when it comes to using our instrument-assisted tools, our blades, within our education. And what I mean by that is that we don't just rub the area until we release the X tissue that we think we're releasing. Mm-hmm. What generally happens with that is that there's generally an over-treatment that occurs that leads to a destructive process, meaning that we actually have a non-curative effect on fibroblasts that leads to a bruising effect that isn't going to help our recuperative stages. So what we talk about is a slow progression in intervention to be able to identify what's the best stimulus for that person that you're working with. And that's different from person to person, regardless of who you're working with. So when it comes to cupping, what we suggest is we apply the cups in the same type of graded fashion. With our cups, we have two methods of vacuum acquisition, is the best way I could put it. Is we have a plunger, like you referred to. It's mm-hmm. just a small implement on top of the cup that allows us to plunge it and create a level of vacuum that is applied to the skin. And then we have another way, which is a increased or a progressed way of adding vacuum, where we invert the cup on itself, apply it over the target tissue, and then we press down and it creates even more vacuum. So what we're suggesting is that we want you to slowly progress the intervention to be able to mitigate the destructive stimulus to the tissue. So that's probably the best way that I can communicate is that we're within all of our interventions that we're slowly trying to graduate someone's experience so then we can identify what's the best intervention that's going to affect them positively.
And it's not really about a passive therapy to just put the cup on, let it cause the suction and just hold that for a couple minutes. You know, one thing that we introduce in pretty much everything is meaningful movement. So in what I've seen from the course, you're introducing a lot of meaningful movement to really enhance that tissue glide with the suction of the cup. So, you know, talk about how we kind of make it a little bit more of an active process to get better effect out of it.
Yeah, that's a great question. Most of the cupping therapy that you'll see, and there's multiple different types of cupping therapy, but the general one you'll see is the cups are applied to the body part and the person is laying there passively. Mm-hmm. What we're doing within our intervention is we're applying the cups over the target area and the local region. And then through the mechanism of pain mitigation that's applied through the cupping, then we're going to slowly start to move that person in a, what we call a meaningful way to be able to reinforce the fact that you can move in a pain-free fashion in a meaningful way. And that's a great stepping stone to giving person confidence and autonomy that they can get out of pain and they can move specifically in a pattern that they want to get back to.
Yeah, and it's very cool too because you said it perfectly there with the autonomy, and it's just it's so enriching for the brain is giving someone this intervention and giving them a safe environment for which to move in, reducing that threat. So it's not about just, you know, causing these big purple blotches and stuff like that too. Because do we have difficulty because cupping is so kind of trendy and popular after the last Olympics? Is there a lot of things that you're trying to dispel, maybe debunk different myths that might have come up with cupping?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest one, again, just to your question earlier, is, you know, are the bruises that you will recognize or the skin responses that you see after cupping, are those effective or not? Mm. And because what we saw at the Olympics, specifically with Phelps, we saw those dark blotches on his skin. And then we start to ask those questions, is this something that's suitable for me? Do I need to bruise to be able to get that effect? And what that did was, is it sparked some new research in the last few years. And what we're learning is that the decompressive load to the tissue that's applied when you apply cups on someone actually creates a response, a curative response that's very interesting. And we're learning about the immune response to cupping therapy. In particular, the release of this enzyme called heme oxygenase. And I don't want to get into the immunological effects in depth on this call, but I definitely want to express that there's a really cool cascade, a curative cascade that occurs when you apply the skin strain to the tissue. And it may lead to slight discoloration to the tissue, which is rupturing of small capillaries in the area. But what that does is it summons this enzyme that's been shown to be very important in mitigating inflammation, in improving, or it's an antioxidant, and it also has curative effects to be able to speed the recovery of the tissue that you're intervening with. So there's, from the Olympics, what I'm getting at is that there was plenty of inquiry about the effectiveness of cupping, which sparked some research. And some of that research has led to a better understanding of what's happening underneath the skin when you apply a decompressive load versus a compressive load. The discoloration that you see with one versus the other has a different immunological effect, which we are starting to better understand.
That's so cool because we're getting into more of that biochemical aspect.
Correct.
You know, a lot of this stuff people really focus in on, oh, it's very biomechanical, very, very, you know, therapeutic and stuff like that. But you get into such a cool thing with enzyme release and stuff like that. You said it was in response to skin strain. Is that any kind of skin strain or is there a specific type?
Well, we're starting to, this is only two studies that have been released, but we're starting to get an understanding that skin strain would be this decompressive load and then tangential, which is side-to-side load to the skin. And so that's what provides the optimal release of heme oxygenase, which is that enzyme that I talked about that's been shown to be curative.
And that's something that could have applications for the floss bands, the blades, a lot of the stuff that we're doing with rock tape. So really, really cool stuff to see that. So can you give us an idea, because we're not doing a lot, we're doing mostly test classes for the rest of this year. Can you give people an idea of where they might be popping up for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend to go to the website. I know the education team at Rock Tape's doing a lot of work to be able to place these in different regions of the country. So we do have plans of having the fall being our main launch of the external courses, and we'll have them from West Coast to East Coast to everywhere in the middle of the country. So I'm look forward to seeing them throughout the country starting this fall.
And there'll be 2 days, so it'll be 1 day floss and 1 day pods. So they're scheduled within a weekend, correct?
Correct. And you could take them individually if you wanted to take one versus the other. But what I'm noticing from the two test classes that weekends that we taught, there's definitely a consistency that you'll get from taking both courses within the same weekend to leave you with more tools.
Well, it's like everything that we have on the docket is very complementary of each other. You can use everything together.
Correct.
Yeah. So, see, where can people find you on social media, just in case they have questions?
I share a lot of these ideas that I talked to you about on my Instagram handle, and that's FasciaDoc, FasciaDoc, FasciaDoc is where I put where I am around the country or around the world and some of the new concepts that we're teaching within our education.
Awesome. Well, if anybody has any questions, reach out to Steve or check out rocktape.com. See where some of these classes are going to be popping up. This is some really cool new stuff that we're launching, and hopefully a lot more great stuff to come. Steve, thank you so much for jumping on real quick and giving us a great explanation of these two new products.
No problem, bud. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, take care.
I want to thank Steve again for coming on to discuss floss and pods. These are really amazing tools that I think can help any practice. Make sure you check out rocktape.com to register for one of these courses. We run them on Saturday and Sunday, so you can take both of them in one weekend. Don't miss out for 2018. There are only a handful of courses available this year. And while you're at it, don't forget to go to the website and register for Rockstock this year in Miami on October 27th and 28th. It's going to be a blast, and you're going to get CEUs at the same time. I'm super excited. I'm actually going to be presenting, and the list of presenters gets much more impressive after that. Don't forget to use the promo code RTPodcasters2018 for $100 off. Thank you so much for downloading the Rock Tape Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review. You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. John Campione. One more time, thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you real soon.